Hello, everyone. This is Erica Spicer Mason with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode on conversational health, innovating with ambient and conversational AI. For today's discussion, I'm pleased to be joined by Peter Durlach, the Corporate Vice President and Chief Strategy Officer at Microsoft Health and Life Sciences, to discuss the latest advancements in AI-driven tools and their potential to revolutionize healthcare systems. Peter, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Erica. Very nice to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Of course, we're excited to have you on. And before we get into the meat of our discussion, I wanted to know if you just wanted to share a little bit more about yourself, your background, your role, whatever feels pertinent.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been in healthcare for a long time. Actually, came from the Nuance acquisition, joined Nuance in 2006 and helped build the healthcare division there. Was also the original sponsor for our Ambient project. And turned into our what we call our DAX Copilot product back in 2017. And after we got acquired by Microsoft and we put Nuance and Microsoft together, I am now the Chief Strategy Officer of the combined Microsoft and Nuance healthcare business, which goes under the title Microsoft Healthcare and Life Sciences. So very nice to again be here today and excited to talk about this topic.
Fantastic. And I'm excited to talk about it as well, especially in light of the opportunities that technology is bringing to the healthcare workforce in this time where health systems are really redoubling their retention efforts, really to ensure that the clinical workforce, as it's starting to slowly bounce back, that it continues in that trajectory. In your view, how should technologies like artificial intelligence-driven tools factor into their strategies to do so?
Yeah, as you know, Erica, even though it may be bouncing back a little bit, it's not as bad as it was in a lot of places. In certain areas, during COVID, et cetera, the staffing shortage is still an existential issue for almost every health system we talk to, whether it's doctors, nurses, radiologists, or other staff members. Everybody is struggling to hire the type, the quality, and quantity of people that they know. So the way we really look at AI at Microsoft is in this concept that I'm sure you've probably heard, is this idea of a copilot, this idea of using technology to empower the person doing whatever task to become more productive and to provide an assistant, a technology-based assistant, i.e. a copilot, to help them accomplish this task. And we've seen really significant advantages from this technology in a number of areas, which we'll talk about today. But if you can really think about whether they're on administrative functions for the administrative team in a hospital or frontline care workers or people in the CDI and coding business, we're really seeing the technology provide significant productivity and enhancement gains to extend this so that it's not going to solve 100% of the staffing problem, but it absolutely can make a real dent in allowing people to effectively work, quote unquote, at the top of their license, whether that's a clinical, someone on the clinical front lines or someone in a more administrative or operational role.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. And what you're saying really aligns with what we're hearing from healthcare leaders right now. For listeners' context, it's conference season for Becker's. And I've heard so many leaders say lately that it's not that they necessarily want quote unquote flashy applications or really kind of wild technology tools. They really want to support their teams and make it easier to help their teams deliver great and personal patient care. So I think that's kind of what you're driving at with this idea of a co-pilot.
Yes, very much.
Yeah, and I'm curious, what are some of the latest AI innovations that you're excited about and why? And what impact do you expect that they'll make in the short and long term?
Yeah, so we're really seeing, as you notice, is a wide array of applications. As you know, AI is a technology, it's a tool that can be applied in lots of different settings and use cases. So there's a wide variety of applications out there today, some more mature than others. The areas that we're really seeing the biggest impact today at scale are on administrative functions where the technology has very much evolved, and I'll give you some examples in a minute. And also, you don't have the same, I would say, criteria that you do if you have something that's affecting clinical decision making, which often requires an algorithm or somebody to go through a regulatory process. So the areas that we're seeing most, so one area that we directly compete in with an application called our Dragon Ambient Experience, which is in this ambient clinical documentation space, which I know you and your listeners are very familiar with. In many ways, it's probably the most advanced application category for AI, the new type of generative AI in healthcare today. And so it allows clinicians and patients to have real-time conversations, either physical or virtual. And then the AI automatically in a few seconds produces a highly accurate, semi-structured note out of that conversation, you know, with patient consent. And we're seeing really tremendous outcomes. We're seeing, you know, reductions of 50% of clinical documentation time. We're seeing over 60% improvement in feelings of burnout. We're seeing over 70% improvement in the quality of documentation that leads to things like better prior auth and coding. And we have many customers that also survey their patients after the visit, and over 83% believe that the encounter is more personal because the clinician, unlike in traditional models where they're both talking to the patient, but also somewhat distracting, trying to remember what they need to document after the visit at some point, that whole second sort of cognitive load goes away and they can just focus on the patient, look them in the eye, and they're not as distracted. The patient feels that too. We all as humans, if you talk to someone, you're going to get a much different experience if you have the feeling that the other person is looking you in the eye and paying attention versus distracted. So we're seeing real value in that, and that technology is really taking off. The other area that I would focus on that we also support from Microsoft through our core kind of cloud Azure AI capabilities is the ability and sort of the revenue cycle payment integrity. Anywhere where you have lots of staffing who are trying to decide how to code a chart, review medical necessity, handle things like prior authorization and utilization management, we're seeing a massive uptick in that because, again, the technology is really good at taking clinical data, extracting key elements, and then trying to match that against a business process. So at a super high level, what we're trying to do is bring the Microsoft Cloud for Healthcare using Azure to enable a whole set of use cases, some of which we produce as our own applications, like our DAX Copilot product, and others where we support the ecosystem of other third-party software developers. So I would say those areas, there are many others that people are playing in, are probably the biggest, you know, deployments of that technology today. And the last one I'll mention, which has been around a little longer, which you're probably familiar with, which is in the imaging space. As you may know, about 75% of all AI algorithms historically have been in radiology. So the third area I would say that's more on the clinical side that has gone through FDA approval is the ability to use AI to look at the pixels of images that are taken in radiology and extract real-time insights, you know, from that, whether that's a CT of the head or a MRI of the chest, et cetera. So you're seeing a lot of uptick in sort of AI-driven imaging informatics, both in radiology and downstream. So if I had to stand back, I'd say those are the three areas, two in the sort of administrative, non-clinical, non-regulated space, and one more in the clinical regulated space.
Yeah, thanks so much, Peter. And what strikes me is they're all pretty diverse applications of the technology, but at the same time, they're driving at those same aims that so many leaders have right now, which is really streamlining care, making operations more efficient, and really honing patient connections between physicians and patients. So appreciate the overview. And I just want to also kind of go a little farther and talk about the financial piece, because so many healthcare leaders are spearheading AI initiatives or they're piloting AI technologies, but it's difficult when they're in the earlier pilot stages of implementation to, you know, prove value, demonstrate value to their organizations, to take those initiatives further. So are there any best practices that you can recommend for demonstrating value or ROI in these early stages?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, one of the reasons those three areas I highlighted are taking off the most is because they do demonstrate an ROI. As we know, there's no health system that I'm aware of that's, you know, rolling in the money, has extra money and time to spend. They're all extremely stressed. They have too many projects, not enough people. So the economics, you know, have always been important, but they're super important now. So there are a couple of clear best practices. One is, again, I don't think any of these will, you know, or be a surprise to your audience. One is you've got to have the clear metrics on what are you trying to move in a positive direction with the technology and what's the economic value of that, whether that's reducing costs and staffing, that's improving throughput so you get more appropriate reimbursement, that's in terms of can you see more patients in the time you have to see patients, can you better do a better job of capturing things like HECs and care gaps if you have a capitated population. So there are always metrics that you have to force the team to measure, baseline versus improvement. And we find where people do that and the technology proves out, there's a clear ROI. So we're seeing that in the ambient space. We're seeing that in the rev cycle and payment integrity space. And we're seeing that in the imaging space. And there's a famous saying that, you know, in healthcare, you know, no money, no mission. So it's very important to focus on these solutions that can really drive the ROI that will pay for themselves and then generate other value. And there is a lot of noise, you know, in the market. So I would just, you know, encourage folks to continue to do what many clients do today, which is have a kind of a rigorous process for that and then look for the references to justify that. But I don't think people just want to, you know, just willy-nilly invest in technology for the sake of technology, because at the end of the day, you know, we all have other things to do. It's really about picking those solutions that are going to drive the impact. And, you know, the three areas I gave have very solid ROIs that many clients have seen.
Yeah, really practical advice. Thanks so much, Peter. And just to kind of round out our conversation, you know, with Becker's podcast, we love to leave our listeners with an actionable takeaway with the, you know, short amount of time that we have together. So wondering if you can share one action that leaders can take right now to ensure that their organizations and their clinical teams are prepared for safe, effective, and continuous innovation with AI. And why would you say that this piece of advice is particularly important?
Yeah, I might take a little liberty and give you two pieces of feedback there. Number one is we've heard from every health system that the number of use cases coming at them with AI are overwhelming, and how many vendor calls they get a week is off the chart. So we have sort of two recommendations. One is you definitely need a governance model to manage the inbounds, whether they're inbounds from your own team or inbounds from external vendors, so that you can have some model for prioritizing the use cases across sort of two vectors: potential time to value and complexity to value, and risk. And so if you think about a 2x2 matrix of, again, what's the potential value, back to your prior question about ROI, and what's the potential risk on, you know, deploying that those AI models. So that's recommendation number one. Number two is, in the use cases that have a clinical impact, what I mean by that is, if I go back to what I described earlier, there are a bunch of use cases where you're improving an administrative process. I would argue that those don't need the same level of scrutiny from a safety, you know, risk point of view, because you're not making decisions that affect clinical pathways for a patient. You're trying to make the documentation more productive. You're trying to make the coding more productive. And if there's a mistake, a human corrects it, and you know, there's no harm, no foul on a patient. If you deploy AI that's in the clinical workflow that's affecting clinical decision-making, that's a whole different, you know, situation. Again, often one that requires a regulatory review for the provider of that. In that case, I think you really need to do the homework on understanding, you know, what is the principles and data behind those AI models. So at Microsoft, we take sort of this idea of responsible AI very, very seriously. We actually have 6 principles that we have to follow internally for every product that we deploy around privacy, safety, bias, et cetera. And so we can't release a product without going through those principles. And we also provide tools in Azure for third parties to use these technologies to try to help them when they build their own product. So for those applications that touch on the clinical decision-making criteria, I think the recommendation is, what data are you asking from your vendor to validate that they have followed some model for trustworthy and responsible AI, in terms of what data have they collected? What are the performance metrics? What other data or systems do they have to test how it's going to work on your given patient population? And often the regulatory clearance is good, but may not be sufficient for someone to feel comfortable. So I think in those category of use cases, you have to have a sort of more rigorous process internally for validating the effectiveness and safety of those AI capabilities.
Yeah, those are such important considerations, Peter. And I appreciate how you've outlined all of them at a high level, but you're also giving some really actionable takeaways for our listeners for next steps, and really ensuring that the partners that they select for technology are trusted and will deliver the value that they're looking for. So as we close our conversation, is there anything else that you think our listeners should know?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of referred to it before, but I think one of the traps people fall into, because there's so much buzz and noise in the industry, obviously, about AI is that you lump all of the use cases into one bucket, and sort of it can get overwhelming at time. And again, I would just reinforce this idea that you have to look at the use case. The use cases determine the potential value, the potential complexity of deployment, and the risk profile. There's no way to really manage or govern AI without having a really clear view of the sort of spectrum of use cases, because you have to treat them differently. So I know for a fact, based on products that we've produced at Microsoft and other partners that we have that are deploying technology based on Azure, that there are meaningful applications today that can be deployed in a very short amount of time. And just as an example, in our DAX product, a sophisticated site can deploy that in under a week or two, fully live on that. And we have other partners that are deploying applications within a few weeks that drive real value. So I know from talking to many clients, there are real hardcore applications that drive real value that are not incredibly large lifts to deploy. And then at the other spectrum, there's much more speculative applications. The ROI is not as clear. There may be much larger patient safety things you have to worry about. So I think it's really important to have that perspective of the spectrum of use cases and treat them in different categories so that you can drive value in your organization quickly with those applications that you have confidence in, while you take more time to evaluate and possibly test ones that maybe are a little, more less mature or maybe potentially more risky. And that's the way to, to spend money wisely and to drive impact, while also allowing you to explore some more, future-leaning cases without getting caught in committing something where the expectations may take longer than you expect to realize.
Wonderful. Peter, can't thank you enough for joining the podcast today and sharing all of these insights and best practices for leaders. I think they're going to walk away with a lot of thoughts and a lot of action steps. So thank you again for being on the podcast.
Appreciate the time, Erica. Thank you very much for the questions.
Of course. And we'd also like to thank our podcast sponsor today, Nuance, a Microsoft company. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.